From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made yesterday when the University of Alabama reported more than 560 coronavirus cases on its campuses after reopening last week. Other schools, including the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Notre Dame, switched to virtual classes just days after students returned in person. Local cases are lower than what we're seeing in some other states, but as reported by WXXI News last week, institutions like RIT and the University of Rochester have seen some positive cases on campus as well. There are no ideal solutions as college administrators, faculty, and students return to campus this fall. Dr. Lori Santos, head of Yale University's Stillman College, wrote to students in a college-wide email, quote, "You should emotionally prepare for the fact that your residential college life will look more like a hospital unit than a residential college," end quote. She added, "We all should be emotionally prepared for widespread infections and possibly deaths in our community," end quote. That email was sent on July 1st. At the time, Yale was planning to test returning students once per week, a plan that the university modified weeks later. The new protocol will require students to be tested twice weekly. According to a study led by Yale researchers in collaboration with Harvard Medical School and Massachusetts General Hospital, universities could likely ward off a COVID-19 outbreak by testing students every 2 days and implementing strict behavioral regulations. They emphasize that quantity of testing counts for more than quality, but there is a risk of testing too often. Well, this hour, we continue our series of conversations with local college and university leaders about reopening. Today, we focus on SUNY schools. Two SUNY presidents are with us to discuss policies related to everything from masking to testing, physical distancing, expectations for students, what to do in the case of infections, and more. And I'd like to welcome to the program Dr. Heidi McPherson, who is the president of SUNY Brockport. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
I'm absolutely happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
And Dr. Irby Sullivan is the president of SUNY Alfred State College. Dr. Sullivan, welcome to you as well.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Dr. Bennells is the president of SUNY Geneseo, was invited but unable to join. We did reach out to a number of institutions, and we're thrilled to have two today because we know time is tight, and we know there are a lot of questions people have about what reopening looks like. So, Dr. McPherson, I'm going to start with you as we look at SUNY Brockport. You know, I'm looking at the University of Alabama, 560 coronavirus cases on campus after reopening last week. Yale telling students, get ready for what feels more like a hospital ward than a residential setting. Get ready for infections. It will happen. Are we at the point where we know there will be infections? It's just a question of what is sustainable and what is too much. Is that sort of the reality right now?
I think the reality is that New York State has done an incredible job of flattening the curve, and that we are much better placed than Alabama and some other places because we've been working so hard on those non-pharmaceutical interventions that we know are the most important things to keep this virus at bay. That's social distancing, that's masking, that's hand washing, and that's increased disinfection. And those are the pillars that we're looking at to reopen our campus. We found that 99% of our students coming back are either coming from the same risk area of Monroe County, which is a very low-risk area, or a low-risk area. Most of our students are in-state students, and most of our students have been, as I said, in those areas that are very low-risk. But because we know that this can be transmitted and we're concerned about those things, we've put in place other things like quarantine. We've asked our students to quarantine for 7 days before they arrive. If they have any symptoms of COVID, they're not to come to campus. They have to do a daily symptom checker, just as faculty and staff do. And we're making sure that we're all taking an opportunity to really focus on our health and make sure that we are as safe as we could possibly be.
Okay. But I just want to make sure I do understand. Do you expect at some point throughout the course of the year there will be infections?
So one of the things that you have to do is we have to look at, do we have infections on our campus? What does that infection rate look like? Do we have people who are in isolation or in quarantine, depending on whether they were, a close associate with somebody who's come down with it or not? We have the opportunity to have some isolation and quarantine beds on campus. We do ask students who have to go into isolation or quarantine to go home and be cared for there. It is certainly possible that we are in an area of currently about a 1% risk factor, right? So, those are possibilities that we could have infections on campus, yes.
Okay. And is there a threshold at which you think, or at least it's been determined, this would be too much? This is when we say we go full remote.
Well, we're going to be doing a daily look through our wellness team at the number of cases and whether they're increasing over a 5 to 7 day period, the capacity limits we have for isolation and quarantine. We're also looking at whether we have any depletion of our inventory, availability of supplies. We're looking at making sure that we have good support and compliance. We're looking at the rates that are in our county as well in our area. So, yes, we're tracking all the metrics that we can. And there are certain metrics that will move us from one area to the next.
All right. And just to be clear on testing, you know, we talked about Yale because they've been very public about their desire to see students tested quite often, perhaps twice a week. Other institutions have told us they're not going to test students. Some are not testing faculty. What is the testing plan at SUNY Brockport?
So we're doing what's called event testing, and that is when there are people who have students on campus who have signs of COVID, we will do that event testing. We can do a rapid test that may indicate the need to do a bigger test and get those students to get the other test that they need to do. We are doing also a little bit of pool testing. That's more surveillance testing. That will be taking groups of students, pooling their tests together, and doing a test of that through Upstate Medical, one of the SUNY schools. So we're doing some of those things as well. So we're doing both, but we're not doing what Yale is doing.
Okay. Do you feel like if you had more testing capacity, you would, or do you think that's just not necessary?
You know, we've had a lot of conversations with Michael Mendoza about the need to test or whether people should test if they don't have symptoms. Asymptomatic people, the reality is if you are asymptomatic, the test has about a 38% false negative. That's a pretty high false negative. So it's much better to do the non-pharmaceutical interventions and make sure that you test if somebody does have symptoms.
SUNY Geneseo, your colleagues there are requiring, as we understand it, students to get tested before they return to campus. In order to return to campus at SUNY Geneseo, all residential and off-campus students will be required to take a COVID-19 test no earlier than 14 days before their arrival in Geneseo, submit a negative test result to Student Health and Counseling 7 to 14 days before their arrival, quarantine for 7 days prior to their arrival in Geneseo, no matter the test results. Not the direction that Brockport has gone. Do you think they've gone too far with that?
I think that every campus must make the decision that works for that campus. What I would say is the most important part of that is that quarantine opportunity, because again, if you're going to get symptoms of COVID, you're likely to get them 2 to 5 days after infection. Having a negative test may sometimes lead people to have a false sense of security. They say, oh, I'm negative, I can go out and do whatever I want, instead of actually following through with the compliance issues that we're looking for there. So I would much rather that we really focus ourselves on what we can do to keep each other safe, social distancing, masking, hand washing, and disinfection.
I also think being asymptomatic might provide a false sense of security at times too, couldn't it? I mean, a lot of college students who end up having this may end up being asymptomatic. Is that possible?
It is possible that there are asymptomatic individuals out there, and that's why when we do have, if and when we have cases on campus, that the contact tracing goes forward and we find out the source of infection. It's very important for us to know when there's known transmission or unknown transmission, and those are some of the things that we're actually going to be having metrics on.
All right, let's turn to Dr. Sullivan, president of SUNY Alfred State College, to kind of run down the plans there. Go ahead, Dr. Sullivan.
Our plans are fairly similar to Brockport as well, but our focus on our plan certainly includes masking in all academic buildings and during class times, so all students will remain masked during the classroom periods. We do have some options for our faculty. They can wear a mask. They can wear a face shield. Their podium is also designed with plexiglass or product that will prevent transmission from the faculty member to students. So all the classrooms across campus have been measured and developed with social distancing involved in those classrooms. So the multiple avenues that we're doing there, we feel will make our instruction, our in-class face-to-face instruction, as safe as it possibly can be. Of course, not only the masking, social distancing, hand washing, the cleaning protocols all established, we think our campus is certainly safer than it's ever been before. And so, you know, similarly, we do not have a lot of infections in this county. It's, I think, 80-some infections in the county that we reside. And the majority of our students most of them are from the state of New York, and we have very, very, very few international students, single digits in international students, and out-of-state students from those states that require quarantine. We're in single digits there as well. So most all of our students are New York, and as the president of Brockport mentioned, Heidi has articulated it well. New York's done a great job in reducing the spread, flattening the curve, and getting us to a point where we have confidence in the plan that was submitted and approved by SUNY and the governor's office. So we can't do enough. Nothing is ever enough. And our expectation is certainly that we cannot guarantee anyone's safety. And we make that fairly clear. We're doing everything we can to make sure this is the safest place possible that we can to provide education. But we're a little bit different than Brockport. We're very much an applied, hands-on institution. Our programs require lab time, require doing things, building things in labs. So it's difficult for us to be able to move any of those programs to online programs. And we're committed to the online, we're committed to the hands-on, face-to-face applied learning. Every single one of our curriculums deliberately has applied learning incorporated into the curriculum. So a little bit different from that. As Heidi also mentioned, we do have isolation and quarantine space available. We have about 15 certified contact tracers to assist departments of health when that is warranted. We did an extensive check-in program for our students, and our first day of class was yesterday, so for fall. But we've had students on campus since August the 3rd, finishing up their spring semester, their lab work. So, again, we're a little different, but principally we're doing the same things across both campuses.
I want to ask both of you about expectations of student behavior. And, you know, I'm thinking about a typical college experience, whatever that looks like, and sometimes that involves socializing, it involves parties on or off campus. It can, you know, I mean, that's not to say that students can't make changes and that students, who are adults after all, can't adjust their own expectations for what social life looks like on campus. I certainly take that point. But I'm looking at a headline this morning. Usain Bolt, fastest man in the world, the Jamaican sprinter, recently hosted a big mask-free birthday party. He wanted to host a birthday party for himself. He invited other star athletes. He said, let's not do the mask. Let's just live our lives and have a nice time. He's got COVID-19 now. And that's not to say that every mask-free party is going to go that way. But, you know, college students might feel that same kind of invincibility that youth brings. So I'll start with Dr. McPherson. When it comes to the expectations for college students, what's realistic for a change in expected behavior, a change in social life? What do you think you can expect, and what do you think will actually come to pass here?
It's a great question. And the reality is when we talk about students, we're talking about human beings. So anytime you talk in the collective and pretend that people are all exactly the same or they need to have exactly the same experience, we know that's not true. We have students who party. We have students who don't party. We have students who spend more time on their studies, and we have students who spend more time on various other things. We have very clear expectations about student gatherings, both on and off campus. We are having no students are visiting residence halls, right, unless they live there. Only students who live in a residence hall can actually go into that residence hall. That's really very important. There are no overnight visitors. That's a change. We've allowed that in the past, but we can't do that in the future. We're very, very clear with our residential life students what they can and cannot do, and we're actually asking all of our students to focus primarily on virtual gatherings rather than face-to-face gatherings. Off campus, we're working very closely with the Village of Brockport and the Village of Brockport Police to make sure that there are no gatherings that are against the protocol calls that we have put in place, which is, you know, a limit on the number of people who can be in any area, a use of masks and social distancing. And if there are behavioral conduct issues there, they will be dealt with right away. We've always had an excellent relationship with the Village Police. They work very closely with our Student Conduct Board. And if there is a problematic behavior of that kind, we will have sanctions on a case-by-case basis that could include suspension or dismissal. We have communicated that very clearly to our students, but we are primarily an education institution. So our first port of call is to educate our students, remind them of what it means to be part of a village and a village resident. And we've asked all of our students to a pledge to protect the nest, as we say, which is basically that we say we enjoy our community, we deserve our community, but we'll do it as a distance. We'll stay at least 6 feet away from others. It's much closer than we were last spring, after all, and we want to make sure that we can keep going forward.
Do you think the students have a pretty realistic view of these expectations that you have for them?
I think so, and I hope so, and I know that going forward we will continue to have conversations. If some of the students do not behave in the way that we want them to, we obviously will be having different conversations with them.
Okay. Dr. Sullivan, same question for you on student behavior.
Well, one, there is an expectation that the semester will be different for students. The freshmen do not know what the normal fall looks like at a college, so they're adjusting fairly well with the protocols that are in place. We established very early on an addendum to our student code of conduct, which requires students to do the things to keep themselves and others safe. And we emphasize that in our meetings and our orientations and things like that as well. We're very strict when it comes to wearing masks when they're supposed to, social distancing when they're supposed to. We have already invited students to return to their home who did not comply and not returning back to the campus as a result of non-compliance. The village, we're very, very located in a very small village, and a lot of people are concerned about so many students. We have two colleges here in a small village, and clearly the residents are a little nervous when they see someone not wearing a mask, walking outside, or what they suspect is not social distancing. So we're addressing the concerns in the village, and we've been working collectively for about 5 or 6 months with local hospitals, with the universities, with the village trustees and others to work to make this a very safe community. Will students mess up? Yes. Will they have to be reminded on occasion? Yes. But again, it is a learning experience, and this is part of the growth that they're going to face when they're asked to do things perhaps they don't want to do once they leave the halls of this institution. So, yes, we're strict on our protocols. We're strict on enforcement. We have people out watching and monitoring the compliance issue, and that's always a concern. Somebody might not want to say, but we take the approach that, oh, you must have forgot your mask today, or you must have forgot the social distancing guidelines, and we approach it that way, and our students have been very responsive and respectful when we've addressed them that way.
Talking to Dr. Heidi McPherson and Dr. Irby Sullivan, the presidents of SUNY Brockport and SUNY Alfred State College, who are with us talking about their own reopening plans, expectations for students, what to do in the case of infections of the coronavirus on campus, and more going forward. And we'll take your questions or comments if you have them. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. Writing for the New York Times, I want to read the comments of Susan Dynarski, who is a professor of education, public policy, and economics at the University of Michigan. Here's what Professor Dynarski wrote for the New York Times. Quote, "In regions where the pandemic appears to be under control, it is most important to get the youngest children back into school buildings to stop the alarming slide in their learning. Older students, especially those in college, are better equipped to cope with the difficulties of online education. That is the broad consensus among experts on back-to-school priorities. But as things stand now, much of the United States is preparing to do exactly the opposite. In many towns, college students are more likely than kindergartners to return to school for in-person instruction. It should be the other way around," end quote. And here we are, Dr. McPherson, when we look at the Rochester City School District is starting entirely remote, despite the infection rates that you talk about, and SUNY campuses are welcoming college students back. I would assume you disagree with Professor Dynarski. What do you make of what she wrote in the New York Times?
So one of the things I would say is that I'm very pleased with the partnership with Rochester City School District. We have about 200 student interns who are going to help our those students either through teaching English as a second language, through special education, through elementary, middle school, and high school as interns and as student teachers, as well as social work and a school counselor interns. So we've got an opportunity to continue to partner with them. We have our students who do have that background in online learning and can assist those individuals. So that's a great thing I wanted to make sure you were aware of. Second thing I would say is that students, again, when we talk about students in the collective, we forget the individual nature of our students and our student bodies. There may be very different student bodies from a small private college to a state institution like SUNY Brockport. SUNY Brockport is really proud of the role it plays in helping individuals to achieve their academic dreams. Some of our students, quite a lot of our students, have very high financial need. They live in households that don't allow them to have that space and time to do that online learning that would be so beneficial to somebody who has a door to a room that they can close and be fully by themselves. We know that our students have also suffered from the digital divide. So we know that bringing our students back to campus allows them access to more resources and more opportunities to be successful, whether that is face-to-face or it's online. Even if it's online, we know that we've got opportunities to give those students more guidance and support through our Academic Success Center and other ways in which we can help our students. So not all students are alike, and our students, we believe, would really benefit from being back on campus.
All right. Dr. Sullivan, what do you make of what Professor Janarski wrote for the New York Times?
Well, very frankly, as many people as you question about what is good and what is bad, you're going to get that many answers. When we look at Alfred State, we look at what's best for our students and what's best for our employees here at the college. A couple of things. Again, because we're heavy in the trades, it's difficult to teach welding online, diesel repair online, masonry online. Mm-hmm. So many of our programs are designed to be in the lab doing things, and as a consequence to that, employers want our graduates, and they beg for graduates who have experience in labs and not just the theoretical. Now, we do have options for some programs that moved online in the spring, and we went to a synchronous model for our online instruction, which meant that if when they left, they had an 8, a 10, and a 1 o'clock class, those online classes would meet collectively at 8, 10, and 1. So they would meet in the same time frame to provide organization and structure to the classroom setting that wasn't actually on campus. But I will say that we are a residential campus, and as such, our residence halls are full, and our enrollment is robust. And we know that the challenges are out there. Our faculty and our staff have stepped to the plate to make sure that we can have a successful fall semester as possible. I will say, however, though, you know, again, returning students see a campus that's much different. It looks different. It feels different. Everyone being masked, dining services are different. You name it, and it is different. No athletics. All of those things that make a fun fall semester are not necessarily making this a fun fall semester. So a lot of adjustment by a lot of folks.
At Brockport, we just heard Dr. Sullivan say that it's a robust student body returning. Sounds like a pretty full campus. What about at Brockport, Dr. McPherson, when we're talking about what's typically there in terms of student numbers, faculty numbers, is it close?
Absolutely. So our freshmen and first-year students coming in, we have more deposits this year than we had last year, which is great, and more registrations this year than last year. So I'm really pleased about that. Our transfer numbers are a little bit down. Our graduate numbers are a little bit down, but we do have a late enrollment opportunity for both of those groups of students. As far as faculty, because of the way in which we are running our, some online, some face-to-face, some hybrid, we will have reduced density in relation to faculty and staff on campus, at least just through October 2nd, which is what the governor has mandated for us as reduced density on our campus. But we are continuing to see people come and go on our campus as long as they're taking their daily symptom checker and they're doing everything they're supposed to be doing. We're keeping people as safe as possible. In relation to our residence halls, we are have more opportunities for students to have single rooms if they wish. But if they wanted to have a roommate, we've allowed them to have a roommate. So we have found that we've got robust numbers, and we're really looking forward to the fall.
Let me grab our first phone call, and this is Rachel calling from Greece. Go ahead, Rachel.
Well, Evan, I was just calling with a question regarding the COVID-19 schools. I have an eighth grader whom, before school, has to comply to rules and regulations and fill out paperwork. And I was wondering if the colleges are going to do any sort of thing or have that be involved with any school-age child, and if there will be consequences if not being complied, whether that be three strikes and you have an issue with your tuition or any sort of backlash.
Can I start at, I'll start at Brockport with this one. Go ahead.
Sure. We have what's called a daily symptom checker, which asks very similar questions to the kinds of questions that the Rock COVID questionnaire asks of residents in Monroe County. So we ask, do you have a fever? Do you have any of these symptoms? Have you traveled out of state, et cetera? If you answer no to all those questions, you'll get a tick in the box that says no. That's online, so you can even show that to your professor as you walk into the classroom to make sure that they've seen that you filled that out. If they fill out that and they have a yes to any of the questions, they will be contacted by either, if they're a faculty or staff member, by HR, or if they are a student, by our Hazen Center, and go through the protocols of all of those things. So we are doing that as a daily thing to make sure that we are continuing to keep our community safe.
Dr. Sullivan?
Likewise, we have an app, and our students and our employees use an app every morning to, as an attestation to whether or not they feel like they have symptoms, they're feel good or they don't feel good. The app is also designed that if they check the box that they have symptoms or they not do not feel well or they have a temperature, students are asked to stay in their dorm, not to migrate across campus, but stay there until they are contacted by our health and wellness department. And then we will assess from there whether or not there's a need for further testing. And what the next steps are for students. Same way with human resources in our employees. Someone from human resources will contact the person if someone checks no on that app every morning. And again, a determination will be made by an expert in HR who is our COVID expert there that will help make the determination of the very next steps that will be taken. But we are also beginning as was mentioned earlier, pool testing. Pool testing will start today, and that's randomized testing of groups of 12. And we will do 15 or 20 of those random tests, and they will represent all the dorms. They'll represent athletic teams, fraternities, and others. So that that pool testing will begin today as well, which will help us identify some neat areas.
So in a pool test of a dozen, you might be a student on campus who's mixed. Would it be, you know, a dozen tests from the same, you know, residence location or?
Typically okay. they're a homogenous group. Mm-hmm. So yeah. If there is a positive among those 12, we begin to work with those 12 and you know, go from there and isolate when we need to or quarantine when we need to. If it's none, we will continue with randomized testing. And what we're doing with pool testing is looking for trends and hotspots on campus. If we do a dorm and there's, you know, three different pools have a, you know, one positive test in there and they're not identified by who it is. So we will test all 12 once one of the 12 has come up positive. So, yes, very, you know, it might be an athletic team. It might be a fraternity or sorority. It may be used typically a very homogenous group.
Yeah, and if listeners are wondering, well, why do a pool? Why not just test the individuals? As I understand it, Dr. Sullivan, this is an efficiency where if you test, just take 50 people and you and I think these are nasal swabs that we're used to, right? They're the pharyngeal what's the term? The PCR? Nasal yeah. pharyngeal, Megan Mack tells me, the producer in my ear. That's it. Nasal pharyngeal swabs. And instead of testing all 50, you can combine them into a single sample. And if that sample is clean, then all 50 are deemed clean. If it's not, then you go and test individually to look for cases. Is that correct?
Basically, it's okay. a randomized testing model. And, you know, this is one that was developed by SUNY Downstate, mm-hmm. To SUNY Upstate. And we get 24-hour turnaround on the results of this. So it will help us to react very quickly to any of the issues involved there.
Yeah.
And just to add a little bit more
sure.
to that, it's actually a saliva test when they do the pool testing,
oh, okay.
so it's easier to do. There are certain protocols that students have to, you know, you can't eat within a certain amount of hours, don't have any gum, et cetera, et cetera. So you've got to have some protocols around when the test happens, but you can pool those together.
Yeah, the saliva test have been pushed by Harvard epidemiologist Dr. Michael Mina, who really thinks we need to kind of crank up the numbers and we can get faster results that way. So I find that really interesting. We've got a number of other questions from listeners for our guests, the presidents of SUNY Brockport and SUNY Alfred. And we'll take those questions after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a conversation about compassion fatigue. Do you feel burned out lately? Do you feel like when you should have patience, you have none? Have you found yourself snapping at someone over something kind of small or something that surprised you? Do you feel like you can't find any empathy or sympathy? Compassion fatigue can affect all of us. And if you're afraid, next hour is for you on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Listeners, if you've got questions about colleges reopening, especially SUNY schools, 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994, or you can email us, connections@WXXI.org. And I've got a couple of listeners asking similar questions about enforcement, and I'll read one of them and ask both of our guests to weigh in. This listener sends a note. This person's a faculty member at a local college who wishes to remain anonymous. And this listener writes the following, quote, "What are faculty supposed to do if a student refuses to abide by COVID rules? Won't sanitize hands, won't mask up, won't stay 6 feet away from other students? Will anyone possibly exposed by such a student be quarantined at the school's expense? What does enforcement look like?" Let's start from the Alfred perspective, and then we'll get the Brockport perspective. Go ahead.
Well, we've done some training with our faculty and staff about students who do not comply. Again, there's the occasion where a student will forget and take a mask off, and we will remind them. If it gets to a point of intervention, we're not asking the faculty to be the one who's going to be the bad guy in this. We're going to we have protocols and guidelines in place to invite someone to remove the student from the class and ultimately go through judicial if that is the means, and if they're, you know, belligerent and just will not comply, we will ask them to change colleges or go home. So we're pretty strict on those things, and up to this point, we've had great compliance by our students when asked or reminded to do something. Again, we'll just not tolerate. We're not in an environment to be able to tolerate someone not following the things that they signed up for in their code of conduct and also the posted guidelines for every single class. And that's another reason why all of our classrooms, we require masks to be on 100% of the time, transferring, going in a building, going between classes, they're to keep their mask on. All the classes are socially distanced, and we've taken the additional chairs and spaces out of those classrooms so they cannot possibly add chairs, and which kind of helps us manage that social distancing aspect of it as well. But no, faculty, we're not asking them to be the bad guys in this, and we have others that will help address the issue. But, you know, merely asking a student to go outside, and then we address the issue from there.
At Brockport, if a student in a class won't follow the guideline, walks in no mask, won't put a mask on, what's the professor supposed to do?
Sure. And again, I would say the same thing as Skip has said here, really. We start by wanting to make sure the students know, hey, did you forget your mask? There are additional masks and things that are available to students. If a student will not wear a mask and will not comply, the easiest thing and the best thing for that faculty member to do is to dismiss that class. That student is behaving in a way that is at risk to the institution and at risk to the class. We do not want anyone to be at risk, and therefore we would remove ourselves from the risk. And that student would certainly be part of the student conduct and talked to very seriously, and depending on the outcome of that, which of course would be something that would go down the line of student conduct. So we're not asking our faculty to be police here. We are saying to our faculty, you have the right to remove yourself and the other students from that situation.
Interesting. Okay. But it sounds like eventually removing that student from campus is a possibility.
Absolutely. Student conduct is very, very important for us. We have very clear compliance requirements that we have to keep people safe. It becomes a public health issue. And if it's a public health issue, we have the right to go down that student conduct route.
All right. Here is another SUNY staff member who sends the following question. I have deep concerns about the lack of protection for staff on campus. Some will be asked to enter dorms where masks are not required, and will have little more than dust masks and rubber gloves to do maintenance work. I've noticed staff being unmasked and not provided with enough PPE. That's from a SUNY staff member, Dr. McPherson. You want to address that first?
Absolutely. So there's different levels of PPE that people have depending on the positions and the roles that they do. Mostly, we have provided two masks for every faculty, staff, and student on our campus, plus hand sanitizer. If there are certain other roles that people have to perform that require bigger and better masks, as it were, those will be provided to them. We are not asking anybody to go into an area that where they are not going to be safe, right? We are very clear about what we need to do there. It is occasionally the case that we have seen people, especially working outside, not masking. We have the opportunity to have people report that. They can even report it anonymously if they want to, so that they don't have to feel they have to get engaged. The first part, though, is we're a community. So we should be able to say to each other, hey, I think you forgot your mask. You want to get your mask on? And in most cases, people will put a mask on when they'll say, oh, my gosh, I forgot it, right? But we do provide the PPE that's required.
Okay. Dr. Sullivan.
Likewise, PPE is provided for all faculty and staff, two masks. We have options for faculty, either to wear a mask or a shield. And we produce the shields here on campus. We have 3D printers that we've been producing a good many of those for a while. So we have plenty of PPE for employees in the event there's an issue revolved around that. Again, hand sanitizers, cleaning of classrooms and surfaces. We provide an antimicrobial key, so you don't have to touch, high touch areas. You can pull a door open without touching. So as many things as we can incorporate to keep our faculty and staff safe, we're doing that.
Dr. Sullivan, is there anything that you've seen in other states? I mean, I take the point that you and your colleague are making regarding the fact that our transmission rate locally is much lower in New York State and in Western New York than in perhaps Alabama, North Carolina, and other locations. But I am curious to know, how closely you are watching, and if anything has given you pause or has indicated to you we should either slow down or we should expect that eventually this is going to happen here or we are eventually going to have to close. Has that come to mind at all watching other campuses reopen before you?
In all the conversations around reopening, part of that conversation was about having to close the campus. There is an expectation that decision may be made for us, and it's likely that if infection rates go up in the state or in a region, that might be, dictated to us, and that's fine. But we will also be watching and monitoring. That's why we want every single day to know who's sick, who's not, who has symptoms, and establishing some very strict areas where we're going to make sure that we're watching those trends. And we've got a number of folks, health and wellness folks, that are tracking this daily. And it's critical that we don't let it get out of hand. So we're all committed to that. I don't think there's any question about any of us wanting to have people sick or have the virus. That's not, that's not what we want to see. But we're going to do everything that we can to prevent it and then to address it very quickly.
Did Alfred consider going fully remote?
No. Again, you learn to operate a backhoe. It's tough to do it online. Most of our programs, in fact, all of our curriculums are heavy applied learning program curriculum. So, we're committed to that model, and employers look for our graduates to have those skill sets when they enter the workforce. So we're committed to that, and we will continue to be committed to applied hands-on learning.
Dr. McPherson, did SUNY Brockport consider going fully remote?
So we've been monitoring the trends like everyone else. We have an emergency operations center. They are monitoring trends daily and weekly, both the internal and the external trends going forward. Obviously, we did go fully remote in March as part of the New York pause, and we watched what that meant to go that way in the middle of a semester. So we wanted to make sure that over the summer, we had done all the planning we could, and the planning we could was to plan as fully face-to-face, fully online, or having to pivot between the two, because you shouldn't just plan for one when you're an institution like we are. So we planned for all of those different eventualities, but the reality was all the measures said to us, this is the time to open, and we put together a plan that we believe can keep our campus safe.
Have you looked at what's happening in Alabama, North Carolina, elsewhere, and thought maybe we should slow down, or maybe this is going to happen here and we should be ready for that?
If we had big outbreaks on our campus, like we've seen in some other campuses, those would be part of the things that we would be monitoring. We would continue to work with our county health officials. We'd continue to work with SUNY, with the New York State Department of Health, with everybody to make sure that we were monitoring those trends. And then if we had to go remote and pivot to remote, we would. We've already planned that we're not having a fall break. Right, we don't want students to go home and then come back. We've already planned that we're having classes on Labor Day, and we've already planned that we were going to finish our face-to-face classes by Thanksgiving. That means we've got a great period of time between Thanksgiving and the second semester to, again, make sure everything is properly decleaned as far as possible everywhere, and to make sure that we, again, have plenty of time for people to be off campus during that period. So we feel pretty confident that we have the right plan going forward, but we've always known that the key to this plan is flexibility. If things change, we must change with those things that change.
Yeah, I take that point. And the reason I'm pressing this point is because I have a number of comments from listeners who are, I don't know if cynical is the right word, but are I'll sum up their views. It doesn't sound to me like either of our guests this hour expect that it is imminent that eventually they'll close. In other words, it sounds like both of the presidents of SUNY Brockport and SUNY Alfred State College expect that they can, with hard work, get through this school year and not have a full-on closure. And the reason I bring that up is because we've got some listeners who say, Dr. McPherson, essentially something like this, that you know you're going to have to close. You were worried about, you know, losing tuition. So you told students, come back, we'll make this work. You know, they wrote the checks, they came back. They're going to go out, they're going to party, there's going to be infections, and you're going to be able to blame the students and say, well, if you would have just followed the rules, we wouldn't have to do this, but now we're going to have to do this. That's kind of the cynical view, but I do understand the concern that that represents, and I've seen that in various ways from different listeners, and I'd like you to address that if you could.
Absolutely. We know there's anxiety, concern, and uncertainty around COVID-19. None of us has lived through a pandemic before. This has been a change for every single person here in New York State and beyond. I don't know a single person who hasn't been somehow affected by COVID-19. Their health, their mental health, their concerns, everyone knows somebody who's been affected in some way. And so, of course, that is part of the anxiety, concern, and uncertainty that we all experience when we think of what is life like now. It's very different from the way it used to be. And so we're all kind of struggling with them. And that's why we have to be reminded of why we're reopening, why we're coming together. We're coming together to provide a meaningful, enriching, and engaging experience for our students this fall. They come to SUNY Brockport to grow and to learn and to stretch themselves. And this semester we know is going to be very, very important for their future. So we must do our best to deliver a version of the in-person experience they originally came to Brockport to pursue. We are opening because we have plans in place that will allow us to do so safely, and I think we ought to do our best to try to deliver our award-winning, our engaging, and our enriching academic programs in person.
Okay, Dr. Sullivan.
I think likewise. If you look across the nation, the reason campuses are closing, they can identify some of the reasons why they have outbreaks, and they're related to big parties. They're related to parties without masks and things like that. And it's on us as well to make sure that we're monitoring that. We have things in place already to prevent that. But when we see someone slipping up and, you know, somewhere where that might transpire, we're going to address it very quickly. It is not a matter of whether or not Alfred State College could be an online college from now on. It cannot be an online college. It's not who we are. So, you know, our commitment is to the students, to the employers that hire our students and our graduates getting jobs there. So clearly, we're going to do the very best. We've invested hundreds and thousands of hours and many dollars to make sure that this campus is as safe as it possibly can be. And again, our plan was approved to open, and you know, we were one of the first to be approved. And you know, we've had this plan out there for a long, long time, and we've asked people to read and understand what our plan is about. And if truly, as Heidi mentioned, there are students who are uncomfortable, they may feel unsafe. Some may go home. Parents might feel the campus is unsafe and ask their student to come home. We understand that. Faculty and staff, you know, have concerns as well. But again, we are doing absolutely everything that we can as an institution to protect not only the health of students and employees, but ourselves as well.
It sounds to me like you fully expect to finish the year on campus.
The expectation is there. The reality of it is unknown. And yes, we are prepared to shift to like we did in the spring to online. But in our program areas this year, we had to bring those spring students back 2, 3, 4 weeks early to finish the lab portion, the hands-on portion of that spring semester in order for them to develop or to demonstrate the competencies of that curriculum. So, you know, we know who we are. We know what we need to do. But we are flexible as well, knowing that at any moment, any time, whether it's the federal government, the state, whoever can dictate to us some things that we're going to have to comply with. But our best interest is in providing a great educational experience for our students.
All right. So last question from listeners. Mark says, Evan, it's still not clear to me what the protocol is going to be for a student who tests positive. Where exactly do they go and for how long? And will they be informed quickly of that? Dr. McPherson.
Okay, so students who are symptomatic and who are tested would need to go into isolation, right? If they have symptoms or they're awaiting a test result, they have to go into isolation. If they have a positive test, they have to go into isolation. We're asking our students to go home, use private transport to go home for that isolation period. Some students will not be able to go home, and in that case, we have a residence hall that we've set aside entirely for that for this year so that we can ensure that that student can get the care and attention that they need. If they are someone who needs to go into quarantine, that's someone who's had close contact with a confirmed positive case for more than 15 minutes within 6 feet of someone, and one of the two parties isn't masked, they have to go into quarantine, and that quarantine is 14 days. So those are the things that we have put in place. And again, with quarantine, we ask them to go home for that period of time. If they cannot go home, we will put them up in the residence hall if they're an on-campus student.
Okay, and isolation for student positive cases, they go home as well?
Isolation and quarantine should both go home. That's what we're asking for. If they have no ability to go home, if they are housing insecure, we have an opportunity for them to stay on campus.
Dr. Sullivan.
Our plan, we have isolation and quarantine space on campus. We will ask them to stay on campus, but isolated or quarantined, and we have food will be delivered to their door. We have protocols in place to protect those who will be servicing them. We also, in all of our classes, we have video streaming cameras so the students can continue their class while in quarantine or isolation so they don't miss anything. So we prefer to keep them on campus if at all possible.
All right, I'll squeeze one more listener question in about 45 seconds apiece. Jim says, please explain what you do expect the students to do on campus. It seems like when you say the campus is open, in fact, everything is really closed and there's not much for the students to do, Dr. McPherson.
We've got plenty of things for our students to do. We have a good residence life program for our students, living learning communities for our students. A lot of that will be virtual. Some things can be in small, very small groups. We're limiting the indoor groups to 25 and outdoor groups to 50. We have the opportunity for them to continue to dine on campus as well as to do takeout. We have the opportunity for them to do a lot of virtual events that will help with their civic learning and their leadership engagement. Many opportunities for students to be involved in their clubs and organizations, and we're working really hard with them to make sure that they have a fun, engaging, and exciting year.
Dr. Sullivan.
Similarly, we have tons of things defined for students to do. Again, a little different than last fall, but we also have, we're a rural campus, so we're out in the middle of the country, but we have put tents up, so there's some outdoor space, socially distanced, of course, but outdoor space where students can spend time outdoor. We have outdoor walking trails. We have some, family-style intramural things planned once we can get a little closer to defining everything that we need to do there. But virtual events, small events, we do a lot of outdoor movies right now, socially distanced on the football field. We have a big big scoreboard there that we can do movies on. So we're doing everything that we can to provide a fun experience for our students here. Not like it was, but I think that students are finding their way around and finding some things that can entertain them.
We reached out to leaders of local SUNY institutions, and you just heard the presidents of SUNY Brockport and SUNY Alfred State College. We did reach out to Dr. Battles at SUNY Geneseo, who was invited but unable to join this hour. But I want to thank our guests representing these two institutions. I know it's a lot of work, and there's a great amount to be done to host a safe and successful school year. And I want to thank you both for making the time, and let's continue to have these conversations and make sure the community is informed. Thanks to both of you very much.
Thank you.
More connections coming up.